We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
And thanks for joining us for another Blunt Business on CannabisRadio.com. We really appreciate all of you joining us. Great content we're going to get into today about the New York cannabis market and talk to another bustling, thriving social equity owner in the space. But first of all, we want to mention that Blunt Business is powered by the Buzz CRM. Time for you to stop juggling multiple marketing tools and ditching those expensive subscriptions. The Buzz CRM is your all-in-one solution with over 500 tools to manage every aspect of your marketing. And we have talked about here on the program extensively about the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works. You want something steady, delivering without constant workarounds or headaches. Well, now we have the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. More intuitive, faster, smarter than ever. Power of AI, the power of marketing, and automation all combined to take care of custom emails, texts, phone calls, all of it. You can get past all these outdated platforms and all these expensive subscriptions that you go to and get one subscription with all the modules you need in one place. It's not just a redesign, it's a revolution. TheBuzzCRM.com is where you go. Subscribe today. It's such a low barrier of entry. I'm telling you, TheBuzzCRM.com. Make sure to go ahead and sign up right now. With me on the program, he started in California's cannabis industry before making his mark in New York. He is a general manager at Culture House. It's centrally located in Midtown Manhattan at Herald Square Park. So yeah, I was looking on the map. It's not that far from Penn Station. So if you're in the area, it's, you know, a great location out there in real in the heart of Midtown Manhattan. I love Midtown Manhattan. So if I get a chance next time to go to another conference or just for another trip, I want to go and make it up that way. But it was originally sent to me a cookies store, and you know, very big distinction, but there was a lot of things with state regulations that didn't allow it to happen, but it doesn't matter. They still sell a lot of cookies products. They still are a go-to destination for cookies fans, carving out its own identity in New York City's evolving cannabis scene. So the general manager of Culture House, his name is Josh Wilson. He's with me right now. Josh, thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me, brother. How you doing today?
Doing really good. Culture House. And you know, as I said, it was a couple of years ago, I was up there in New York City. And again, just when you look at the bustling of all the things that were going on in New York State and getting here to open this store under the CAURD licensing, that we were just talking before the air, that it had been about 18 months or so, you know, getting up towards the 2-year mark from the initial licensing up to the opening that you have, or actually, no, a little bit less than that. Sorry, it was 2024 you opened. So now we're at this point, a year in, and when you look at building the brand's identity, you had to go ahead and make an adjustment because you were going to have it be called the Cookies Culture Store. Now it's Culture Store, so that was a little bit of a setback. Then there might be the issues of where every other social equity holder has had about trying to go through permissions or go through inspections, permits, and I've had a number of stories here on the program from license holders talking about, okay, they got their license. They're trying to get the funding that they need. They're having to worry about if they're going to get the loan from Chicago Atlantic or some other private bank that's going to come in there and, you know, charge 20% interest on their loan. And also be able to stave off enough investment and hold on long enough to go past if they make you go through a pop-up opening. And then they go to the physical opening of the store. Tell me about what happened, because it took less than 2 years, even less than 18 months, for the store to get operational from license to the opening. What can you tell me for other license holders about what it was you're able to do to be able to navigate through all this?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, I would like to tell other folks about the journey. I know we kind of talked about it before this, but, you know, there is a unfathomable amount of luck that kind of goes into these practices, right? There's a lot of people who are on the social equity list for the CARB license. There's a lot of folks who are willingly, or not willingly, but, you know, are definitely deserving of having a social equity license. But really what it comes down to, I mean, one of the biggest things I could tell anybody, especially, you know, hindsight being 2020, is, you know, choose your partners wisely, make sure that you guys all are anticipating a elongated process of approval. This is something that we've seen in every single state that has a social equity program. Nothing ever happens on time. Nothing ever happens how you might anticipate it to happen. I know there were, you know, inklings about us being able to open up the store, you know, 3, 6, even 8 months after, you know, the awarded license, and that turned into about 18 months. So with some, you know, back and forth between us and the OCM, with some, you know, talks that were just going on, events that were going on around town, I think there was enough of a luck and enough of a good timing, if you will, that put us into an ability to open up the store back in January 2024, after kind of hemorrhaging, you know, our finances for a little bit, just like anybody else, honestly, in this space. But, you know, really at the end of the day, you know, we held it together. We got lucky. And I don't know how much, you know, cash on hand was, like, you know, left. Before, it was almost like one of those, hey, maybe we got to figure this out and sell this license or something of that nature. But I know it wasn't off the table. So, you know, just the right timing, the right partners, and just a hint of luck, you know, definitely helped push this thing along.
Like, was there anything you could say that was a benefit in terms of how much you're willing to go ahead and hold off to invest, or any discussions you had with inspection with the Cannabis Control Board to move the license forward or to get the permits or inspections to go quicker?
You know, I would say being proactive in the community. A lot of the OCM people, some of them do have cannabis backgrounds, some of them don't. But nonetheless, we did find in several instances that, you know, we were going to, you know, cannabis communal events. The partnership, that is, I wasn't just quite out here yet. But from what I understand is that, you know, they were able to meet up with people and build relationships and kind of, you know, I would say not through a bureaucratic process, right? But just through just natural like conversations back and forth. Hey, keeping your name out there. Hey, look, you know, we have the spot on 9586 Avenue where the cookie store, the Culture House dispensary. Can you do anything for us? Can you look into this? Can you, you know, we've been, you know, hemorrhaging money for this, you know, X amount of time. So we were overly communicative. And I wouldn't say to a fault, but definitely to an annoyance, I would say. But, you know, when you have this much money invested and you're paying for a mortgage and you're really trying to, you know, stand on what you have without having to dig deeper into your pockets or add additional investors for that matter, communication was everything. You know, we definitely had to put ourselves in situations where we could talk to people from the OCM. We had to keep going around and seeing if anybody had a connection or what was working for other CARB licenses as well in the city. A lot of it came down to relationships, right? So, hey, how can we build this relationship? Well, we just got to keep on communicating. And eventually we will start communicating to the right parties. And that's kind of what got us into the position where we were able to get that approval.
Now, let's talk about the fact that the original plan was to have this be a Cookies location. It was going to be definitely prominently branded as Cookies Cultural House. And we know that Cookies already has other dispensaries in other areas. I know down in Miami, where I'm here in South Florida, that we have a location here and that they've been spreading around. But in New York State, there was something about that was trying to go in, what was allowing it to be connection to Cookies without having any issues with regulatory hurdles. What can you tell me about what it was with the cookies distinction that was not allowed to be put on the actual name of the store? But, and then how have you had to go navigate around making sure that people knew that you're the one-stop shop for cookies?
So, I mean, I'll put it into two perspectives with that. You know, first and foremost, you know, this is my seventh state that I've had a hand in helping open up cookie stores. And we've always got a little bit of backlash, whether it was the name or they didn't want the big store presence, right? Or big brand presence for that matter. Specifically in the state of New York, that was no different. But they had regulations basically saying that, hey, look, if Cookies wanted a license here, Cookies themselves as an entity would have to apply for a license. Now, in other, you know, states, and just like almost a lot of, you know, other big players have done, you know, we go in there, we find a preferred partnership with somebody who's already gotten a license, and we basically partner up with them, right? And they get their equity, we get our equity, and we bring the brand, we bring the blue to the store, right? And essentially, you know, New York had said, and they took a strong stance on this, that, you know, we would have to apply for it as a Cookies. But since that wasn't the case, we had to kind of rebrand and rethink what our identity would be. And our card licensee, Gabriel Martin, had actually gone on and said, you know, well, I wanted this to be a place of culture. And that's kind of what the whole idea of, you know, bringing the Cookies store to New York was in the first place, was to bring that cultural element to New York. But with that being said, right, we just kind of, you know, decided on the culture house. Now, by all measures, you know, it's not easy taking that name and the weight of that name and then, you know, expecting to get the same follow through with the name by Culture House, going from a Cookies to a Culture House, that is. But if you see us, right, you can't miss us. You find yourself in the heart of Midtown. We have the big old Cookies Blue building. You know, quite frankly, myself, you know, I got the job because of my ties to Cookies and the success I've had with helping open up a lot of cookie stores. So, you know, this place, I try to tell a lot of people, it's not on us, it's in us. So you'll see, you know, we do have a lot of the education. We do have a lot of the strains. We do have a lot of the support from that of a, you know, a Cookies background. But, you know, we are doing what's in our own cultural identity, which is the Culture House piece, right? And trying to get people to understand that transition, because before this was opened up as a dispensary, we were the Cookies clothing store, right? So a non-licensed, just, you know, clothing store. And a lot of people, you know, I would say probably felt a little taken back when they would come here because they were expecting to buy weed, and we would have to break right. their heart and say, hey, look, you know, it's just clothing. But, you know, bear with us. One of these days, we'll be able to do what we want to do. Lo and behold, I think a little bit of why we were able to get our license, you know, online and get the, you know, customers from the door originally for the dispensary was because we stopped trying to push the idea that this was going to be Cookies NYC and said, hey, look, you know, we're going to go with the Culture House. And that was more of an allowable naming convention for the OCM to kind of agree to and, you know, move on with. So it's definitely been a little bit of a heartache there. And I think one of the bigger things is, too, is what a lot of people, you know, have the notoriety towards Cookies for, which is our genetics. You know, we've been a big player in the genetic scene. That's really what it kind of comes down to. A lot of people say, oh, man, they're a clothing brand, or, oh, man, they're a dispensary. What we really are at the core of our identity for Cookies is a genetic company, right? So getting genetics into the state of New York hasn't been easy. And, you know, legally that is, right? We want to make sure that we are, you know, partnering up with people on a legal level, finding the right people who are going to care about our cultivars and care about, you know, what we do in our SOPs. But that has come with a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a difficulty just because of the current parameters set in stone for the OCM in regards to cultivation and in regards to processing. So, you know, we don't have the full recipe figured out yet, but we're starting to see a nice little progression moving the right direction, if you will.
Well, because you got a great location, 35th and 6th. You have that big blue building that stand out with the C on it. So there's enough of a closest to the branding that people will recognize, and they already know that it was a clothing store before, so they realize the full circle. Oh, not just the merchandise for the clothing. Now you got the products. Now you're full stop shop. So all that's there. And by the way, folks, if you are in the area, again, 35th, West 35th and 6th Avenue, Midtown Manhattan, Herald Square Park, open every day till midnight if you're going to go check it out. For all the different areas that, when it comes to flowers, pre-rolls, vaporizers, edibles, concentrates, topicals, tinctures, orals, and more, Culture House. We're going to come back more with Josh Wilson. He's the general manager of Culture House NYC. And we'll talk more about a recent story that came out where the cannabis industry now and the Office of Cannabis Management, now has new strict oversight with their new Trade Practices Bureau. This is brand new. We're going to talk about that with Josh after a short break. Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm here with Josh Wilson, General Manager at Culture House. Again, New York City-based dispensary at West 35th and 6th Avenue.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
In Midtown Manhattan, Herald Square Park. And by the way, before the break, I did mention the if you see on Google Maps, that's where I looked at myself, was that you see the big C sign on the building. You won't see it anymore, but the building is still blue, correct, Josh?
Absolutely. Cookies blue.
Perfect. Now, let's move along into regulatory challenges and the Trade Practices Bureau that has now been opened up. So New York State now has this bureau, which is going to crack down on compliance violations. Now, very interesting they decided to go ahead and put this together. I was wondering what they were going to do in terms of what they're going to try to do. They specifically, this is from stupiddope.com, I'm reading from this, that they're going to crack down on any dispensary or license holder failing to meet strict regulatory standards, off the books product sourcing to look at, undisclosed investors, or misreported financials. They want to level the playing field for legal cannabis businesses while reinforcing accountability. And so it's all broken down when they talk about this as well, but we'll go and break down that in a moment. But real quickly, as an overview, what do you see, how do you see this enforcement division impacting the legal market? And already, what is it doing directly for stores like yours, and what should dispensary owners be mindful of that has really changed the game now that this is in place?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I would say that, you know, things like this are, to reality, and a lot of people might not agree with me, they are necessary, right? As we look to kind of, you know, combat what is like the traditional market versus like the legal market, it is important because there is a lot of knockoff within this industry. There is a lot of unregulated products that are going around. And quite frankly, you know, as somebody who, you know, worked in the Prop 215 market back in California, I definitely have love for my traditional market people. But at the same time, the game has definitely changed a little bit, and we're starting to see like a recklessness or a carelessness towards consumer safety and product behavior. So, you know, a lot of this comes down to making sure that people are truly getting well-tested product that is safe for consumption, safe access to these products as well. So you're not just buying it from some guy who has no intention of your safety, one, but has no intention of really complying to like the regularities of the industry. And really, you know, just at the end of the day, you know, you're going to see it probably on the bigger brand crackdown first. I don't know if they'll go towards like the smaller guys by any means, but there's been a lot of knockoffs in this space. And I think one of the funniest things was somebody had told me, because we had just released, you know, cookie strains back in the market last year. People were like, cookies has been out here. And we were like, oh yeah, you know, we had the clothing store. They're like, no, we've had our genetics out here. And it's at the same time, we've never had any licensed legal genetics out here. So a lot of people could buy, you know, knockoff things. A lot of people could buy fake branded bags and then just put their, you know, their own work up in the bags for that matter. And that's kind of what this whole bureau, if you ask me, is trying to get at, which is making sure that people are getting tested product, that they're getting regulated product, that they're getting product that actually contributes to a legal society of cannabis.
Now, we've also talked about, when it comes to New York State, about how many stores that are illegal, or their shops are even might be running out of buses or other operations. And as of what, last July, I know that Governor Hochul said how they had like over 1,000 illegal operations shut down, and there's been, you know, they've been doing what they can about it. But it is one of those things, yeah, where these things just keep popping up all over the place. Same thing going for hemp shops being raided as well. And now there's a state Supreme Court justice that actually was stopping that right now, where sheriff's office and state regulators were being prohibited from conducting searches. So there's been a lot where raids been going on, ongoing, and trying to go ahead and get rid of. And they're saying right now, what was this from the New York Sheriff's Office? They're talking about there's about a good 3,600 unlicensed cannabis shops in New York City alone, and flagrant violation of the law. Now, and it comes to this Trade Practices Bureau, are they going to be any way involved, or is that still a law enforcement matter about, while they're enforcing and cracking down on stores like yours to be compliant and regulatory, are they going after the illegal shops? Are they going to be in charge of that?
I don't really necessarily know where their parameters lie. I can tell you from personal experience, though, like, we just had one of the bigger players, right? Somebody who's been knocked off a lot, who's been on the New York scene for a long time, a vape brand out of California called Stizzy. They just launched in the market about a week and a half ago, right? We were one of the preferred places to launch with. But with a big brand alongside another big brand, the very first day that we launched them, I actually had the OCM here and doing a full compliant, you know, look into the books, look into the invoices, look into the manifest, look into the testing, looking at all the products, you know, taking pictures of all the products. Because they, you know, they are doing their job in the sense of, we've seen this product be knocked out before. Are the processors that are now currently licensed distribute Stizzy, are they doing all the practices they're supposed to be doing? And sure enough, you know, they were in and out within 30 minutes. They didn't really disrupt my business or anything like that. But they're having to, you know, dot their I's and cross their T's, if you will. I will say, though, you know, to the piece that we were talking about earlier, they said back in July that they, you know, closed down X amount of stores, and they definitely started doing that. I want to say middle of May, we saw a great increase in revenue week over week once the operation padlock started like enacting. But really, the reality of it all is, you know, you can't stop the hustler. In New York, you know, one of the things that this city and state, for that matter, you know, prides itself on is it's a city of hustlers. And
oh, yeah,
you could knock them down once, right? But they're going to get back up twice. So, you know, as much as they are shutting people down, and it's not as prevalent as it once was, because, you know, as somebody I've seen, you know, what they call or consider trap stores, right, in many states, New York was by far, it looked like the most legitimate traps I've ever seen. If I didn't know any better, I would have thought they were like legitimized stores, right? So they're definitely cracking down on them being more in the public, you know, eye. But even then, if you go to some of the boroughs, there's still some ones that are operating at a high level, which is very surprising to see. I think they just knocked down a retail. I want to, you know, don't quote me on this. It's in one of the boroughs. It's either in Brooklyn or Queens, I want to say. But it's underneath the guise of Big Chief, which is a huge state brand back in California.
Yeah.
Has no relationship to the brand. Stole the logo. Stole the naming. And they were saying that they were doing about $6 million. They weren't doing $6 million. They fined them $6 million. But currently what happens with a lot of these practices is, right, is that it's underneath a, you know, a LLC that's like a phony LLC. And they just kind of, you know, dismantle that business license and then they can go open up another LLC and do the same thing. Rinse, wash, and repeat, if you will. But, you know, I can't focus my business on that. I know it's more so the OCM's focus and their new, as we mentioned, what's it called?
Well, either which way, what was effective was the fact that when they were able to get illicit shops shut down around your perimeter, that actually helped out in business. I mean, you actually saw the change in revenue immediately after those shops got shut down.
Absolutely. No, yeah, we definitely saw an uptick in one, just natural traffic, right? The weather was getting better. And we were already seeing, just as a newer shop, we were only online for like 4 or 5 months at that point. We were seeing natural week over week growth, of course, but we saw a pretty substantial spike over the next several weeks after that.
So here's the thing. All right, let's roll it back. So January 24 is the opening. And we were talking about this back on Blunt Business back last year. when Governor Hochul talked about the rollout being a disaster, this was back in March, and she says that they were going to go ahead and, you know, take 30 days, her team and other state leaders, to formulate an action plan to turn things around when it came to the illicit market and the issues of that, and the regulatory issues that were going on because there was issues with contamination on the outdoor grow. There were issues with products that were being put out that might have been illicit. There were a lot of issues that we were trying to go through that was just so much. So therefore, their answer now is the Trade Practices Bureau. And the increased oversight reasons they have already said right now is, first of all, it's to level the playing field to ensure small businesses and social equity license holders aren't pushed out by those who skirt regulations, protecting illicit untested products from entering legal dispensaries, and ensuring cannabis businesses pay their fair share in state taxes, and cracking down on undisclosed financial backers, hidden deals, and misreported revenue. So this is now in place. Do you feel like this was a good answer from what happened in March of 24, or even before then? And you've seen some of the results. Do you feel like what they've instituted now with this Trade Practices Bureau, was this a good action plan they put in place, do you think?
I think it's a decent action plan. I'll tell you like this, any type of governmenting that I've seen in multiple of these states, it comes with its positives and it comes with its negatives, right? A lot of this stuff is necessary, as I mentioned earlier on the podcast, is like, you know, we do need some of the structure. We do need some of this this enforcement just to make sure that everybody's playing, you know, by the same rules, right? If I have to pay my taxes as such, and I have to look over all these things and, you know, don't even get me started on what taxes I can't write off, right? I need to make sure that, you know, the playing field is fair. Now, all in all, I'll tell you like this, that's not my job to oversight. That's not my job to look over. My job is to worry about this business and this business, you know, alone. But it's nice to know that there is a piece of the government agency extending on from the OCM that is a little bit more focused on this piece of the business, right? Because I think this is something that California failed to do for quite some time as far as like the actual lockdown and the actual, you know, shutting down of a lot of the illicit practices that go on. And it's a little bit more of a free for all out there. Now, New York has taken on a lot of the same habits I see, right? There's, you know, people who, and to the problem is, you know, a lot of it is the regulation, but there's people who are having to basically pull product off the shelf due to things coming back off of from like bad testings and everything like that. And they're already running into labs that are doing missed testing. That took a grand, probably about 7-6 years for California to come to the forefront and say, hey guys, I think these test results are fake or phony, or somebody's paying to get these test results through. They're already cracking down on this, which we saw about 2 weeks ago, that they're starting to look into these things that are proper enforcement practices that need to be part of the industry, so that somebody's just not paying to, you know, amplify their THC, or one, pay to put a product that shouldn't be out on the market for, you know, consumer safety onto the market. So to keep those bad products off and keep the playing space fair for all, you know, cultivators and such, is definitely going to be a big piece that this this bureau plays. But I think it is necessary. I'm sure in hindsight, we'll see some things that were maybe over-policed, see some things that weren't necessary, see some things that were a waste of time. But all in all, I think that nobody has it figured out. I don't think there's a perfect remedy towards anything right now. And I think this is one of those things that just needs to happen, right? One of those like necessary evils, if you will.
Oh, yeah. The only thing is I don't see anything where in the story that's about the fact of if they're, while they're looking at, you know, making sure the businesses are above ground, their taxes are being paid off, the part about the cultivation part and the product testing, I guess that's another area that I would like the Trade Practices Bureau to go ahead and focus on more, or if that's going to still be an OCM issue, if they have made any changes in an action plan for that. Because I think that was another thing was, at least in my area, is that the compliance levels, I'm sure that what Culture House does is pretty much, is going to be probably well above what New York State requires. But if New York State has a bit of a lower barrier to entry for compliance compared to other states, I would, if they're not trying to be GMP compliant, let's just say, I'd like to get to see where, you know, dispensaries are going to be policing their own and making sure that their products are above ground. Obviously, I'm sure Cookies has its own particular standard. Can you tell me, do they have one in particular that has to be met? Is there a universal standard they have at Cookies for all the stores that you've opened? Is there one set standard that is being implemented in every store that you've worked at?
We can't basically extend ourselves over what we get, right? So I've always been very, very keen on my inventory and intake team to really match up batches and really match up COAs, right, certificate of analysis, with whatever product that we're receiving. Now, I've, you know, personally caught several times that, you know, batches have been off or test results have been off, or the what's the appropriate allowable variance of the test results is not, you know, there. In those cases, you know, it's just a simple talking to the vendor and saying, hey, these are off, these need to be returned, I need the proper batches. And even as a state that's not currently on a track and trace system, and this state will be using MyoTrack, we still have these best practices from other states that we've opened up in that still to this day, you know, would carry over into a market like New York that is not quite on that track and trace system. So, you know, all in all, we just try to make sure that everybody is compliant, and we understand at any one of our stores the one, the magnifying glass that is on us, but two, the standard that's expected from a store that we run, you know?
So let's go ahead and go back to another commercial break. When we come back, we can talk more about the store itself and really just some of the obstacles you already went through, and we're going to focus a little more about what your experience was transitioning from California into the New York market and just get your take on that. Again, I'm here with Josh Wilson, GM of Culture House. Website, by the way, is culturehousenyc.com, culturehousenyc.com. But also, if you're in New York City, come on. It's right there, Midtown Manhattan, Herald Square Park, West 35th and 6th Avenue. Go ahead and check there. It's also open every day till midnight. So any of you New Yorkers right now, if you're walking around the city, get yourself on the subway, get up to Penn Station, make a couple block walk, and go check out Culture House for all their products, especially cookies that they have there. We'll be back with Josh and final questions after this. We're rounding the home stretch. I'm here with Josh Wilson, General Manager of Culture House. Website again, culturehousenyc.com. So the reason why Culture House was not able to go ahead and necessarily launch as a cookie store was under their true party of interest rules. I don't know what necessarily that all entails, but when that was put in place, what was it that you actually had to do to adhere?
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
To this TPI rules that New York State has for you to go and still function as a store showcasing cookies products, but without, you know, ruffling any feathers.
So quite frankly, you know, Cookies has no ownership in this property, right? We have no ownership in the license. I say we very loosely. I am an employee of Culture House specifically. Right. But the cookie side has no ownership in this. And that's kind of how we were able to navigate around the TPI agreement. Additionally, too, you know, the thing is right now, you know, we're not a micro business either. So if we were cookies, technically under what the TPI would state is that I couldn't sell cookies-based products, right? I could sell cookies products now simply because we are Culture House. I know there are only allotments for the micros to be able to do the selling and manufacturing and distributing of their own products, but we could not do that in that case. So a lot of what we do right now is just kind of keep the party separate. I still have, you know, people who I speak to on the cookie side for one, for just like, you know, what we're doing, the cookies drops, how they would like things, what the visual merchandising is supposed to be, what the marketing going towards is supposed to look like, as well as just say, hey, look, I need help on this retail question. I need help on that retail question. But all in all, they have nothing to do on paper with this store specifically.
You also worked on operating and opening stores on the West Coast. And wanted to just get your take about the transition about working from the California market and any lessons you got that are relevant for New York operators, what the differences are. Because obviously there's quite a bit of a change in terms of, you know, when you're opening up the new store in such a crowded market like California that's just oversaturated with businesses, plus the taxes you have to go and take care of on top of that, excise or whatever else. And also the fact we talked about last week on the program, or at least I recorded the show last week, and it'll be on a future episode, about how California is looking to go and possibly increase your excise tax up to 20% to try to make up for the lost tax revenue and things like that. So anything you can tell me about the comparisons you had from opening there to here?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the comparisons, first and foremost, is that there's a lot more legalities that go into opening a store on California simply because of the maturation of the industry out there right now. Additionally, you know, the taxes piece is incredibly, it's incredibly a failure, if you ask me, out in California, specifically because they always have these projections for what they're supposed to, as a state, get back on the taxes. And instead of saying, hey, look, maybe that us driving up the taxes is actually pushing people back into the black market, if you will. They're like, oh, no, we're just going to increase the taxes to make up for the differentiation, right? So I think a state like New York, where, you know, if you were looking at not from an industry standpoint, but just from an economic standpoint, taxes in New York kind of replicate that a little bit to what is in California as well. But when you look at the cannabis standpoint, New York has actually done a pretty damn decent job of making sure that the taxes aren't just outrageous. And that's definitely a benefit for a lot of New York operators out here. But going back to California, you know, we definitely have a little bit more of a idea of, hey, look, you know, the retail is not your bread and butter. The retail is not going to, you know, change your life, simply put, just because there is so much of a saturation in that market alone. We are starting to see a little bit of the saturation kind of hit into New York with a new couple licenses happening up in NYC every week, as well as the major boroughs as well. I don't know really what I don't have like a positive or negative stance on, hey, we should, you know, release more licenses or, you know, stop releasing licenses for that matter. I believe in a free market. I believe like some of the best, you know, operators will rise to the top, and those who aren't such good operators, they will fail. But, you know, all in all, I would like to make sure that if any of those things do ever fail, that it's not because of unfair regulations or anything that only, you know, favors like the bigger guys. I want it to be a free-for-all where just, you know, the best of the best rise to the top. And that kind of goes down to the next point, too, for New York as well. Cultivation has been a little bit of a pain piece for me out here. My brother, you know, has a social equity in cultivation back in California. But to the piece out here is I feel like they really handcuffed the cultivators out here. What I mean by that was originally, you know, you had the license or the regulation stating that they could only grow in a mixed light greenhouse or outdoor for that matter. And only the MSOs were able to do the indoor growing because they were medical operators beforehand. But that really put a lot of people into what I like to call, you know, kind of growing with your hands tied behind your back. It doesn't really work, right? So there's a lot of good cultivators out here who weren't given good parameters to do what they do, which is produce high quality flower. So I think, you know, once New York kind of eases up on that and takes a step back and realizes like the bottlenecking or the chokeholding that they're doing towards the cultivation side, I think New York will only get better for the retails as well. Because if there was an area of opportunity for a lot of New York retail, you're looking at the concentrates and you're looking at the flower, which, you know, concentrates only as good as the material that you put in, and the flower out here could definitely use a couple of notches of an increase in quality, if you will.
There we go. Let's go wrap things up. Let's go and direct people to, again, West 35th Street, 6th Avenue, Midtown Manhattan, Herald Square Park. If you are within the vicinity of Penn Station, Grand Central Station, Port Authority Bus Terminal, if you see the Macy's across the street from it, a big, bright blue building, that is Culture House. Go ahead and check them out. They have full set of offerings online. And you could actually go to the website, culturehousenyc.com. Real quickly, do you, besides the storefront you have there in Midtown, is there any delivery available?
We actually stopped doing delivery just because the payment processing that is required to do so before taking on a delivery is a little bit of a pain in the butt. So at the current moment, with the current regulations, we're not doing any type of delivery.
Well, it's also like, how many more bikes do we need on the pass out there? You want to avoid getting hit when you're walking around. Let's just say that.
No kidding. No, I will say, though, this is the city of convenience, I feel like, you know. So I always was expecting that delivery would be a big, big player in our operation here. But lo and behold, you know, just like a lot of things in New York, I've had to take a step back and be like, okay, everything I've learned from this industry is not what I can bring to New York. I got to take a step back and respect New York for what New York really is, which is its own monster.
Well, think about it like this, too. I mean, Josh, I mean, everybody's used to walking anyway. When I think about the fact that I was there March 2023, and I remember within 2 days, and I took a little bit of the subway while we were there, I walked 30 miles in like about 18 hours, and that was not hard to do. Like, I mean, first of all, the food is always great. Let's just make sure of that. And But the thing was, is that just to get around everywhere, right, especially in Midtown, it was so easy to walk around and just move around. And just, I noticed that when you could tell they were New Yorkers, they're all in like better shape. There's nobody's like overly fat or like overly, you know, carrying a lot of weight, because you got to walk those subway stairs. You got to go and, you know, go across that concrete and pay through, and you're walking blocks on blocks and you are just moving around. So I don't think anybody, I mean, we're not so sedentary. Imagine New York City, is not as sedentary as Florida, where Florida, you know, you got people that want to get Uber Eats and DoorDash, or they want it delivered to their house, or whatever cannabis delivery too. That's a different thing. But in New York, no, you walk everywhere. You walk everywhere and you go to the store. And obviously, when you're thinking about all these different stores that are around and how crowded and busy the streets are in the first place, you see that bright blue building, can't miss it. And you're going to go right on in. And again, it must be doing great. So, and I can imagine that the foot traffic must be stupendous where you're at.
Definitely. I mean, we have, you know, what's the one thing that they always say? Location, 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 right? So we do have a beautiful, you know, spot. I will say, though, you know, just like anybody, any business, any retail for that matter, January, always a little bit of a harder month than the previous couple months were. But nonetheless, to your point, you know, we are extremely blessed to have this advantageous location, if you will. And, you know, definitely doubling down on your piece, you know, the walking that goes on out here. I'm a California guy. You're a Florida guy. I used to drive if it was 3 or 4 blocks up. Now I'm like, oh, it's 10 blocks up. Whatever. You know, we'll just start walking right now, you know, call it a day. So definitely a difference in consumer behavior, definitely a difference in this transient behavior, if you will. But, you know, all in all, you know, this is, it's beautiful out here, man. It's New York City. We're selling weed. You can smoke weed anywhere you want on the streets out here. It feels like it's even more acceptable than what it is in California, it feels like, which is, you know, damning for me to say as a Californian. But all in all, man, New York is it's a spectacle, and it definitely deserves its place to be in the cannabis talking industry. And I'm excited to see what a lot of the New York players and the people who have been doing this for decades and decades, when they come to fruition, and see what they bring to the market as well. So
you're in late winter right now in New York City, you know, 30s, 40s in the temperatures for the daytime. It's nice, brisk. Just throw a jacket on and get out there and move around. It's not bad. I'll tell you, I mean, the one thing I always enjoyed was just when New York was just the fact that just being able to walk around and all the sightseeing. And also, you know, with the foot traffic, you have time to go and just keep the store open. You know, you're going to get traffic. You're going to get business coming in, which is why your store also is open 8 a.m. to midnight, Monday through Friday, 10 till midnight Saturdays, 10 to 11 p.m. Sundays. A lot of time for people to go and get there. Again, 958 6th Avenue, Herald Square Park, Culture House, New York City. Make sure to check that out. And again, check out Josh Wilson, general manager there, and his team there. And Josh, thanks for being on Blunt Business. Really appreciate you taking time out. And we got a chance to go ahead and talk about New York State. It was a great conversation. Appreciate it.
I appreciate you, brother. Thank you for having me.
And as always, folks, thanks for listening to Blunt Business. We'll talk to you next time. We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.